Oh, that's right. Today I've got a very special guest for you. We are talking to John Warren. He is running for governor of the great state of South Carolina. And, you know, I don't think he was on anybody's radar before he decided to run for governor. How you doing today, John?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So just out of curiosity, how has been this whole experience of running for governor?
I think it's been incredible. You know, we have some amazing people throughout the state. And one of the things that when you're running statewide, you get to go to every place in all the counties and just meet some really interesting people, some great people. So I've enjoyed it.
But you had to have, you know, that's great. Let's see. You've invested a lot of your own money in this run. What made you decide to invest money? I mean, $3 million is not a small amount of change.
No, it's a significant amount of money. It's a ton of money. It's hard-earned money. It's not family money. I made it. I worked hard for it. But ultimately, my dad told me as a young kid, if you want to know what's important to a person, look at where they spend their money and their time. And I really believe that we live in the greatest state in the country. But when you look at what is produced in Columbia, it is the opposite of that. And I wasn't going to sit back and allow career politicians and government insiders with no track record of success to continue to lead our great state. We needed an outsider. We needed a successful businessman. And that's why I invested the money. The investment is in South Carolina, and it's going to be an amazing return for the South Carolina voters.
Gosh, that sounds an awful lot like Donald Trump, President Donald Trump.
Well, they don't. We have one huge difference between us.
Okay.
I don't have my own Twitter account.
They decided you shouldn't have one?
I told them I could have double the followers very quickly if I was given a Twitter account, but I haven't been given the Twitter account yet.
Okay. But what about everything else, though?
I think Donald Trump, from a policy perspective, has done an incredible job. I strongly support his Supreme Court justice, strongly support the tax reform, strongly support the deregulation of through the executive orders that he's done. The one thing I would differ with him on are the tariffs. Our industry here in South Carolina is dependent on importing steel. I was with a company down in Somerville that imports 100 tons of steel a month. And the reason they do it is because our steel industry is inefficient, mainly because of unions. So I don't support the tariffs, but I think Donald Trump has done an incredible job overall. And I wake up every morning ecstatic that Hillary Clinton is not our president.
Well said. But, he was an outsider.
Total outsider. You know, Governor McMaster called me a rookie, but he says he's a huge supporter of Trump. So he supports one rookie in the White House, but I guess he doesn't support the other rookie in the governor's mansion because he doesn't want to lose his job. So,
well, I think you can understand that.
I definitely understand it. They're running scared. He and Catherine Templeton are afraid they're going to have to return to the private sector and work like the rest of us, and it terrifies them.
Well, do you think that you brought up an interesting point about the union vote? What about the union vote at Boeing?
I think it's sad. I don't think it's good for South Carolina. I don't think it's good for the actual employees. You know, if you look at what unions do now, they served a purpose way back in the day when we didn't have any labor laws, we didn't have any employment laws. They're so outdated now, and unions ultimately just take advantage of the people that they're supposed to represent. The only thing that unions care about are dues checkoff. They will sell out an employee so fast as long as they can get dues checkoff, which means all the employees' money is confiscated by the company and handed over to the union to ensure that dues are paid. And I think it's a terrible thing.
I agree with you. And that's always been one of the strongholds of South Carolina, is that we haven't had unions here. And that's actually, isn't that part of the reason that Boeing came to South Carolina?
I think it's why so much industry comes to South Carolina. And we need to make sure this remains a strong union-free state. And as governor, I will fight against the unions.
Well, you know, that brings me to an interesting question, though. The power of the governor. The governor doesn't have a lot of power. The power is in the legislature.
There are 110 agencies across the state. And of those 110, the governor only controls 16. but it's $10 billion of the overall $28 billion budget. So my goal is to go in day one, reform those 16 agencies. I'm going to task competent people to run them and find efficiency problems. So save taxpayer dollars and improve customer service. Then I'm going to apply pressure against the legislature to do it across all 110. But then ultimately, we have to change the legislature. There are a few rotten apples, especially in the Senate, especially one person named Hugh Leatherman in Florence. And I'm going to find quality candidates to run against the people that continue to betray us, continue to sell out the Republican platform. I'm going to find quality candidates to run against them. I'm going to help them get financing, and then I'm going to campaign with them. And that is how we change the legislature, and that's how we get real reforms through at that point.
Well, I guess the question would be, since we don't have term limits here in South Carolina, and one of the things that people are always saying when you have that term limits conversation is that they must be delivering to their constituents.
Well, the problem is we do have term limits. The problem is we don't have term limits for the legislature. We have term limits for the executive, for the judicial. They just don't want term limits for themselves.
Well, and they're in power, so that's explainable.
But there are a group of people. I testified a few weeks ago at a Senate subcommittee on term limits. There is a strong contingent of legislators who want term limits, and we need to make sure that there are more legislators who approve of term limits and get that passed, because I firmly believe that term limits will end corruption, at least significantly weaken it, because people won't have the desire to continue to get reelected because they can't continue to get reelected. The other thing is it will get a higher caliber person willing to run if they only have to go down there for 6 or 8 years.
Well, I think that's another one of the problems with the whole business is we don't pay enough to get quality people in the jobs. And very few people can take the times away from the job, even though there's a lot of people that would like to serve. I think that's one of the reasons we have so many lawyers and retired people, because they have the time.
Exactly. We need some, we definitely need less lawyers, and we need more entrepreneurs, more teachers, more doctors. We need people that have actually contributed to society and really make a difference and create value, not just manage risk. And lawyers, you know, they're either suing someone or they're managing risk, but they don't create actual value. And we have got to have some entrepreneurs and businessmen go down there and run government efficiently.
Well, I'm all for a business people being in business and doing this, but don't you need to have corporate memory? If in a corporation, you never get rid of everybody because you still need corporate memory.
I believe that term limits are, it would save our state. It would save our country. You know, we've got so many we've got millions of capable people in our state and in our country, and we're just not dependent on all the people down in Columbia currently. We can manage fine without them.
Okay. All right. Anybody down there in Columbia, look out, because if John is governor, I guess you're going to be SOL, right?
Not all of them, just a few of them.
Just a few. All right. So, as far as how you got started in life, I was reading an article that said you started doing shoe shining at 8 years of age.
I had a lot of jobs when I was a little kid, but the one I remember the most and I think taught me so much about life was I went into my dad's closet, I raided it, and stole his shoe shine kit and proceeded to go door to door. I'd literally just knock on the door and say, shoe shine for 50 cents a pair. And I was racking in money as an 8 year old. And then unfortunately, I ran out of supplies. And dad taught me a pretty tough lesson. He taught me the lesson between revenue and profit, because he made me pay for the resupply. And it taught me the value of money and how hard it is to start a business, run a business, and make money. And I think that's a lesson that the legislature needs to learn when they're doling out all of our tax dollars.
What does your dad do?
My dad was a labor management labor lawyer, so he fought unions his whole life. I was probably the only 12-year-old in the country that could recite the 1964 Labor Relations Act. But that's how I know about dues checkoff and things of that nature. But unfortunately, he passed away about 4 years ago from brain cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. So you did that at 8 years of age. You, what did you want to be after that, though? What did you think your life was going to be like?
Well, I initially wanted to be a fireman. Then I got involved in basketball. I thought the NBA was going to be calling me, but for some reason, I remain undrafted. I'm still waiting for the call.
So You're not tall enough, I don't think, John.
But I can shoot it.
Okay. So,
at least I could shoot it. But I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Ultimately, I just wanted to emulate my dad. I had so much respect for him. He was a lawyer, but ultimately he really, his guidance was to not become a lawyer. So ended up going into the Marine Corps because I felt called to go into to service after 9/11. And when I came out, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be somewhere in financial services, I thought, somewhere in business.
Why?
I didn't know much about anything else. I didn't know anything about construction, didn't know anything about logistics, but I felt like, you know, the financial markets were interesting to me and wanted to learn them.
Did you think your military service prepared you for life?
I think military service prepares you to be an executive, and it prepares you in so many ways. It's an experience, you know, speaking personally, I never was wounded, so it's easy for me to say what I'm about to say because I didn't have to sacrifice like some of the others did. But, you know, when I went into the Marine Corps, I felt like I was sacrificing for my country. And the further out of my from my service that I get, I realize that I gained so much from that experience. I have unbelievable relationships. I had an opportunity to lead men in the toughest of situations in combat, and I think that prepares you for anything that you can possibly face in life. You know, General Mattis, there's a lot of talk about PTSD now, mm-hmm. but General Mattis talks about post-traumatic growth, and he talks about if you go through very, very difficult times, you grow from it, it toughens you, and it allows you to function at a very high caliber in all the other situations in your life. And I'm one of the lucky ones that has the post-traumatic growth.
Let's see. I think I read an article. You don't really believe in PTSD. Is that right?
That is not accurate. PTSD definitely exists.
Right.
But I do not believe that you can have PTSD if you did not see combat. And I believe too many people are taking advantage of the PTSD situation. People that never saw combat are claiming PTSD, and I do not believe that's accurate, and it dishonors the ones that actually suffer from PTSD.
Okay. All right. So now you started this business. You know, you didn't have any money when you started, did you?
The only money I had when I started, I spent on a diamond ring, which was the greatest investment of my life. It was a diamond ring for my wife. But no, I didn't have any money. I credit my wife for being our first angel investor in the company because she had a steady job. And it allowed me to start the company. I saw an opportunity. I'd flipped a couple homes prior to going into the Marine Corps. So I knew the real estate industry, and I saw an opportunity to provide lending to real estate investors because of all the regulations that occurred after the financial crisis. And that's how we started.
Well, I mean, when you read your background here on your 50 most, Greenville Business Magazine's 50 most influential and upstate business journals, calling you the closer, that's pretty interesting.
Well, it was a nice honor to get. You know, we closed a lot of financial deals, so I guess that's how I earned it.
Yeah, but you've also grown a huge $1 billion in capital.
The number one thing about growing a company, in my opinion, it's all about the company's core values. The second hire I made at the company was bringing in one of my closest friends in the world, which was my company gunnery sergeant from Iraq. He is still today the COO of the company. We built the company together. And the reason that we've grown so quickly is because we know how to assemble great teams. And we just have unbelievable people working at Lima One Capital. They're great people to hang out with. So it's fun to go into the office. And it's unique that people enjoy going into the office, seeing one another, hanging out. And that
are really a lot of them military, ex-military.
We have multiple Purple Heart winners, multiple people decorated for valor. You know, I tell people, if you're given an opportunity to hire our great veterans, hire them not out of pity, but hire them because you want to improve the profitability and culture of your company.
Sure.
And that's what we've done.
So a lot of your employees are
multiple employees or ex-military.
That's cool. That's great. So what will you do with your company should you become governor?
Well, I've already stepped back. It was a very hard decision to make. But, you know, one of my mentors told me that if you start a company, you've got to make sure you burn the ships to where you're totally 100% committed to building the company. I applied that same wisdom to running for governor. So one of the reasons why I was late into the race was because I had to find a CEO to replace me. I've moved to chairman, so I have burned the ships. I'm 100% committed to being a candidate for governor, and I'm 100% committed to being governor.
Okay, well,
but I may have to ask you for a job if this
whole thing
doesn't work.
I was going to ask that question. I didn't want to burst your bubble here, but maybe you can go back to work there. I want to talk a little bit about your wife, though. I was reading some of her information. She worked in the White House for Bush.
Yep.
She was a writer.
She's an amazing woman. We met on a blind date. I tell people that by the second date, I had to marry her, and she felt the exact same way. It just took her about a year and a half to get there, but she did get there, and we've been married about 9 years. We have two wonderful boys, Stevie, who's 2 and a half and running all over the place. I'm going to have to get back in better Marine Corps shape for him. And then we have Drew, who's 5 months. The story on Drew is that Courtney had Drew 7 minutes after we got to the hospital.
Wow.
So she's challenged me to bring that type of efficiency to state government. So I have my work cut out for me.
But does she still work?
She still works. She's a risk manager for Marsh & McLennan, which is a large insurance company. So she specializes in helping companies manage risk, especially those in biotech. She's on the South Carolina Bio Board and things of that nature. She's much smarter than I am.
Well, okay. Shucks, folks. Now, let me just ask you, though, what happens with her job when you become governor?
We haven't, you know, one of the things that we did when we got into the race, we just said we were going to take it, you know, moment at a time. So we haven't reached any decisions in that. That will be a group decision. I hope that she's able to continue her career because it's important to her. She contributes to the businesses throughout South Carolina and really the Southeast. So we haven't decided, but hopefully she'll be able to continue in that.
Well, I think that you look like you have a pretty good package going here. What about, you say you're firmly in the court of being pro-life.
I have always been 100% pro-life. The ads that are being run against me are total lies. They're lies that are done by desperate politicians and government insiders who are terrified that they're going to have to go to the private sector and work for a living like all the rest of us. I'm 100% pro-life. The only exception I ever have had is in the case of the life of the mother. And that's the only case. You know, the only person that's flip-flopped this entire race on the abortion issue is actually Catherine Templeton. She switched from multiple exceptions to now she believes in no exceptions. So I think it's very disingenuous. I'm very disappointed in her as a person for airing those ads, but that's what desperate career politicians do, and I'm going to rise above it. I don't think it sticks to me because people know that I'm a true conservative. They know that I'm 100% pro-life, so we're going to continue to run a positive campaign.
And what do you think about all this, I'll call it hate, that we have going in our country, the back and forth, the political divides, the conversation that just goes from all over the board, and it just seems that all we want to do is smear, smear, and more smear. I don't know what's happened.
I think the difference is, I think it's two things. I think people, number one, there's a huge distinction between what I would call a smear, which I feel like I'm being smeared. Mm-hmm. It's not based on anything. It's just to smear someone so that it hurts their poll numbers. You know, our poll numbers show we're clearly in second now. So they're desperate. So they're trying to smear me to ruin my poll numbers. But there's a difference between a smear and a contrast. You know, some of the things that Catherine and Henry do not like when I contrast them on, you know, mine are professional They are showing distinctions between their voting records, their donations of money to mine. And, you know, when I hit Catherine Templeton, I hit her on things that she has admitted. She voted for Vincent Shaheen, who is a pro-abortion Democrat. She voted for him over Nikki Haley. That's not an attack on her. That's just showing here's the difference to the voters. I would never, ever vote for Vincent Shaheen. She did. I would never give money to a Democrat. She has. And when all of the conservatives were fighting hard to find out who our Republican nominee was going to be to take on Obama in 08 and 12, Catherine Templeton didn't even bother to vote. So I think when you talk about contrasting, I think that's fair game. When you just talk about smears, that's unprofessional and uncalled for.
Well, I think in our country, we have a very definite hard line, and people, you know, we seem to have gotten away from the niceties of just saying hello instead of screaming at somebody hello. I mean,
I think social media has done that too, because there are a lot of people that will never say anything bad to your face. But man, when you get them behind Facebook or you get them behind an email or Twitter, they go to town.
I think that's called "Oh, bless her heart" to her face. And did you see what she was wearing today?
we call them typing warriors in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, typing warriors. Yeah. So, as you look at this campaign, and next week at this date, you will be. It'll all be on the table. What are you going to be doing? You've got a debate tonight.
I'm just continuing to get our message out. You know, from the beginning, someone asked me, how on earth can you describe how you went from 1% to over 20 in about 6 weeks? And I said, it's never been about me. I'm strictly the messenger. It's all about bringing conservative reform agenda and representing the conservatives throughout South Carolina. And it resonates with people. My biography resonates with people. They're tired of career politicians and government insiders and lawyers always being in charge. If you look at what they've brought us a $4 billion loss at Santee Cooper. We're 50th in education. Our roads are crumbling. We're overtaxed. We're still funding Planned Parenthood. I mean, there's nothing that government touches.
What about the tax form? What about our taxes here in South Carolina? I mean, every year, I asked the other day about this, every year we're going to tackle that tax form. We're going to get our taxes in shape. And every year they put it off because there's another election coming around the corner.
Well, they put it off because they're not really Republicans. They're not conservatives. They do not believe in the Republican platform. We have three parties down in Columbia. We have Democrats who adhere to the liberal Democratic platform, and they vote that way. Then we have conservatives that adhere to the Republican platform, and then we have Republicans that adhere to the Democratic platform but say they're Republicans. And we've got to do a better job of vetting the Republicans that we're sending to Columbia, and one of the ways to do that is closed primaries. Republicans should be deciding Republican candidates, and Democrats should do the same, and then let's meet in the general election.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm going to give you 2 minutes now to tell the folks why they should vote for you.
I am a businessman, a conservative, and a Marine. And what I am not is a career politician, a government insider, or a lawyer. I'm running to represent the taxpayer. I'm running to fight for the taxpayer. And when you look at this race, it ultimately comes down to leadership. The listeners are going to be voting for the leader of our state for probably the next 8 years. And I will tell you that in leading a lot of combat missions, in growing a successful business, leadership comes down to three traits. It comes down to a person's core values, their core competencies, and whether or not they have courage. And I will tell you my core values. I am a Christian. I am a conservative. I believe in business sense, common sense, and service. And those are the core values that I'm going to take to Columbia. In terms of my core competencies, I've been very successful at everything I've done. I've been successful on the battlefield leading Marines against Al-Qaeda. I've been successful in creating jobs at Lima One Capital. And we have got to have a businessman to go to Columbia who actually knows some business sense, who can tackle these complex problems and make our government run more efficiently and value our taxpayer dollars. And finally, we've got to have someone with courage to go down there, fight for the taxpayer, take on the special interests, take on the lobbyists, take on the career politicians and fight for the taxpayer, and that's what I'm going to do, and that's why our message is resonating, and that's why we're going to be the next governor of this state.
Will there be any lobbyists if you're elected governor?
I don't know if I can get rid of the lobbyists. I can definitely make sure that they have less power.
Less power. Okay. Hey, we've been talking with John Warren. He is a Republican candidate for governor. He has been at Howard's today. Hope you got to see him. If not, I hope you enjoy the interview. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. John Warren, good luck, and thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.